Radio. Coming up is the news.
Chinese President Xi Jinping warning his U.S. counterpart Joe Biden not to cross Beijing's red line over Taiwan. The European Union imposes new sanctions on a group of Iranian individuals and entities over Tehran's response to the recent riots in the country. And Turkey arrests 46 people in connection with a bomb attack in an iconic Istanbul district that left 6 people dead and scores more injured.
Welcome to World News here in the Iranian capital. I'm your host, Behzad Shafiq. Good to have you with us.
Our top story this hour, the Chinese president warning his American counterpart not to cross his country's red line over Taiwan. Xi Jinping issued the warning in a landmark three-hour meeting with Joe Biden ahead of the G20 summit in Indonesia's Bali. According to the Chinese state media, Xi stressed that Taiwan is, quote, the bedrock of the political foundation of bilateral ties. He said, however, that he's looking forward to working with Biden to put Beijing-Washington ties back on the right track. Biden said that the U.S. wants to manage differences with China to prevent competition from becoming conflict. Both leaders stressed the necessity for handling their relations in a peaceful and proper manner. Tensions between Washington and Beijing have been simmering in recent months, especially over what China calls the U.S. interference in the affairs of Taiwan, a self-ruled island that Beijing claims as its own. A professor of international relations from Oslo, Glenn Deason, says that the U.S. has a dual personality toward China. It says something, but it does something else.
The United States has a tendency to say one thing and do something very different. So, for example, the main security threat for China is the effort of promoting secessionists within Taiwan to break free from China. Now, the U.S. always states it's fully committed to the One China policy, which for the past 40 years, the U.S. accepted that Taiwan is a part of China and they should only have cultural and economic connections to Taiwan. They claim that they abide by this, but at the same time, they tend to gradually undermine the One China policy. The U.S. also says they want stable, predictable economic relations with China, but at the same time, they're going into a full economic war, blocking the export of high-tech products, and very openly saying that they want to slow down or even weaken the Chinese economy. So, and at the same time, they have their officials traveling around the region trying to recruit other countries in East Asia into what's effectively an anti-Chinese bloc. So the United States, they seem to mobilize against China, while at the same time, they are saying that they want more stable and peaceful relations.
Now, the 9th Joint Economic Commission of Iran and Venezuela has started here in Tehran, and the three-day event officials from both countries are discussing ways to enhance economic collaboration in different sectors. Gisu Mjahmedi was also there.
A high-ranking Venezuelan delegation is in Tehran to take part in a joint economic meeting with the Islamic Republic. The purpose of the commission is to deepen cooperation in strategic areas as part of a 20-year agreement signed between the two countries.
This is the 9th Joint Economic Commission, and as you know, representatives from both sides have identified potential areas of cooperation in different fields, including transportation, industries, agriculture, energy, science, and technology. We will be trying to find ways to facilitate trade between the two countries to boost bilateral relations in order to avert the consequences of U.S. sanctions.
The Islamic Republic of Iran and Venezuela are two independent states that share common views about many regional and international issues, such as seeking independence, the right to self-determination, and a multipolar world order.
We care about the well-being of our nations. Our values are different from imperialistic countries. Now that our people and our governments are united, we can avert the U.S. sanctions and allow out countries to prosper through bilateral cooperation and strong political and economic ties.
Part of our scientific cooperation and training includes ways to advance new trends in molecular biology, biotechnology, and proteomics for cancer treatment.
In Venezuela, we have been testing regenerative agriculture in order to avoid desertification. We have achieved excellent results, and now we are ready to share our experiences with Iran.
Iran and Venezuela signed a 20-year cooperation roadmap during a state visit by President Nicolas Maduro to Tehran in June 2022, as the two oil-rich countries sanctioned by the U.S. pledged to boost bilateral ties.
The 9th Joint Economic Commission of Iran and Venezuela will be going on for another 3 days. It is expected to pave the way for implementing the cooperation agreements signed between the two countries in different fields. Gisumi Shahmadi, Tehran.
Iran says it's provided evidence to countries whose nationals are involved in recent riots in the country. Foreign Ministry spokesman says that some ambassadors have been summoned, served with a note of protest, and requested to provide a diplomatic response. Nasser Kanani says illegal measures have been adopted for countries and foreign nationals linked with the riots. He added that Iran has also taken necessary measures in response to, quote, foreign intervention that caused damage to the country. Riots broke out in Iran in September after a young woman collapsed at a police station and died in hospital days later. Tehran has blamed foreign provocation for the riots, saying that some countries like the U.S. and the U.K. were directly involved in stirring up the situation. Time now for the news review. The European Union has imposed fresh sanctions on Iran over its response to the recent riots in the country. An EU statement says that 29 individuals and three organizations have been targeted over what it calls Tehran's widespread use of force against peaceful protesters. Interior Minister Ahmed Vahidi, as well as several military and police officials, are on the sanctions list. Press TV is also one of the three entities blacklisted. The sanctions include travel bans and asset freezes. Tehran has warned of a proportionate and firm response to the fresh EU measures. The bloc came up with similar sanctions last month, targeting over a dozen Iranian individuals and institutions. Tehran rejected those bans as a clear example of meddling in its internal affairs. Iran also described the move as another proof of the EU using human rights as a means of achieving its political goals. Now, to get insight and discuss this, I'm joined by a couple of guests, Sakima Sakai-Biria, assistant professor with the University of Tehran, and joining me, also with me, is Elijah Magnier, journalist and political analyst in Brussels. So let's start with Elijah. Elijah, this is the sanctions. This is not the first time, as you know, that the EU is imposing on Iran, press to be included. So what about France? We had yellow vests, and we had people losing their eyes, people getting killed, getting maimed for life. So the EU should also think of imposing some sanctions on France, and even worse than that, police brutality seen in the world, like that Jack Floyd saga that rocked many parts of the world.
Well, first of all, it is a general rule in the West that what is permitted for us is not permitted for other countries, particularly those countries like Iran, Russia, China, and North Korea, Cuba, who are against the U.S. hegemony and against the Western dictate. Secondly, there are, yes, indeed, as you rightly said, 1,049 people killed at the police station in the U.S. Nobody speak about them. The double standard is widely spread and widely used in the West. We look at countries depending on our benefit and how we deal with them. Human rights and freedom of expression is exerted not on Julian Assange, but is exerted on countries that are challenging the U.S. hegemony. So inevitably, when we look at the riots in Iran and the consequences of people going in the street, burning the property of the government, killing police officers, wounding 1,000, killing 52, burning ambulances, all these, including the involvement of armed elements in Kurdistan, trying to stir up the Shia Sunni in Sistan Baluchistan, evoking the partition of Iran in the north, all that is something that the West has really mastered and is very good in playing it, mainly the color revolution that hit several parts of the world. So basically, to sum up all this, it is a double standard indeed. We look at countries who are challenging the hegemony of the West in a different eye and a different consideration, of course.
Okay, thank you for that. Now, on the phone with me is also Ms. Birja. Let me ask her this question. Ms. Birja, good to have you with us. So there's also this ban on press TV. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, let's make a comparison between what press TV is doing, being the voice of the voiceless, covering what's happening in Palestine in occupied land and what's happening in Yemen and elsewhere in the world, and what some UK-based Persian-speaking TV channels are doing, not in their capacity as media. They just simply look and sound like a war room or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Of course. Yes, what I want to say about this is that by sanctioning entities like Press TV, European Union and, of course, you know, countries like the United States are supporting this move by the European Union, are attempting to create a complete media blackout in the world. You know, media monopoly is turning into media dictatorship, basically. That, as you said, the voice of the voiceless is going to be muted. In a way, you know, the only thing that you can hear is what the, you know, the powerful countries want you to hear. And, you know, the as you know, the ownership of the many media entities around the world is held by, you know, very few corporations. So we are seeing a situation where these countries are actually using the moment, and actually you could say abusing the moment, to create this sort of media blackout to achieve some sort of political end. And, of course, this is happening at a time that we are reaching the end of the Western global order that has been there for the past 500 and so years. Mm. You know, we have had a colonial world order in which these European countries were used to you know, their old colonial tactics of removing the countries, the governments with which they had difficulties, and that was something that could be done easily. Then we had the bipolar world order, and then we had the American unipolar moment. But now we are reaching the final years of that Western global order. And I believe that when we are reaching the end of a global order, you would see much more violence on the side of the countries that are the losers, basically. Okay. You know, the European Union is losing its power, the United States is losing its power, relatively speaking. Mm-hmm. And so you see that they are bringing every measure possible here to, you know, create a one-sided media environment in which there is no room for any alternative message to be given to the audience. Basically giving them a choice of hearing this media outlet or the other.
Okay, that's all the time we had. Let me thank our guests, Elijah Magner in Brussels and Hakim Esaf Birja in Tehran, on the phone with us. Now moving on, Turkish police say that they have detained 46 people in connection with the Sunday deadly bomb attack in the heart of the city of Istanbul. A Syrian woman is among detainees, so the police say he has planted the bomb. The woman confessed to have received training by militants affiliated with the outlawed Kurdistan Workers' Party, PKK, in northern Syria. The Kurdish militant group, though, has denied involvement in the bomb attack. The U.S.-backed Kurdish militant group in Syria, known as SDF, has also denied any role in the bombing. At least six people were killed and more than 80 others got wounded. The blast took place on the busy Istiklal Street of Istanbul, which is popular with locals and tourists. In the meantime, international condemnations of the attack and condolences for the victims are pouring in from across the world. Messages of sympathy have been issued by Iran, the European Union, France, Ukraine, Greece, Egypt, and the U.S., among others. Turkey has rejected the U.S. extension of condolences. Authorities there have linked Washington's support for Kurdish militants in Syria to the explosion. A presidency official says that the attack is the result of the backing that the PKK is receiving from foreigners without mentioning the U.S. Interior Minister Suleyman Soylu also likened the U.S. condolences to a murderer arriving as one of the first at the scene of the crime. Our correspondent in Turkey, Rashan Saglam, joined us from Istanbul to elaborate more on Turkey rejecting the U.S. sympathy regarding the recent deadly blast in Istanbul.
The Interior Minister, Süleyman Soylu, said that we are not going to accept Washington's condolences in the incident that took place yesterday. The terrorist attack that happened in Taksim was done by terrorists from or related to the PKK, PYD, YPG, and it is known for Turkey and now I think the world that the United States is actually supporting those groups, the PYD particularly, and YPG, which are the armed and the political wings of the Kurdistan Workers Party, PKK, inside Syria. By weapons, by money, and logistics. So Turkey have always called the United States to stop supporting them. Since the Obama administration, this has been a point of conflict between Erdogan and Obama, and this is mainly why the tension was still going on between the two administrations.
Now in Spain, truck drivers have started a new strike, hundreds of them marching through the capital, Madrid, against changes to freight rules and the cost of living. Protesters carried banners and chanted slogans such as, "We don't want subsidies, we want solutions." Several other cities also witnessed similar events, but in some locations, marches were called off. The truckers brought Spain to a halt earlier this year when they staged a month-long strike. It caused food shortages and a bout of inflation that hit quarterly economic growth. The truckers eventually obtained a 1 billion euro package that included rebates on the price of diesel fuel, but they say the rebates have been overtaken by the rise in fuel prices ever since. Organizers of the new strike say that they want to protect profit margins and keep truckers' costs down.
That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/EN.
the ocean of dua. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we'll have a glance at Kumail's supplication and we'll discuss a commentary on that. We'll be back in a few seconds, so stay tuned.
Ya Mawlaya, fa kayfa yabqa fil adhab wa huwa yarju ma salafa min hilmik am kayfa tu'limu an-nar wa huwa ya'mul fadlaka wa rahmatak am kayfa yuhriquhu lahibuha wa anta tasma'u sawtahu wa tara makana am kayfa yashtamilu alayhi zafiruha wa anta ta'lamu da'fa.
Brothers and sisters, as you were previously with us, we were discussing this part of the Divine Kumail supplication. Ya Mawlai, فَكَيْفَ يَبْقَى فِي الْعَذَابُ وَهُوَ يَرْجُو مَا سَلَفَ مِنْ حِلْمِكَ. My protector, so how should he remain in the chastisement while he has hope for your previous clemency? أَمْ كَيْفَ تُؤْلِمُهُ النَّارُ وَهُوَ يَأْمُلُ فَضْلَكَ وَرَحْمَتَكَ. Or how should its flames burn him while he expects your bounty and mercy? أَمْ كَيْفَ يَحْرِقُهُ لَهِيبُهَا وَأَنْتَ تَسْمَعُ صَوْتَهُ وَتَرَى مَكَانَهُ. How should its flames burn him while you hear his voice and see his place? أَمْ كَيْفَ يَشْتَمِلُ عَلَيْهِ زَفِيرُهَا وَأَنْتَ تَعْلَمُ ضَعْفَهُ. How should its groaning encompass him while you know his weakness? أَمْ كَيْفَ يَتَقَلْقَلُ بَيْنَ أَطْبَاقِهَا وَأَنْتَ تَعْلَمُ صِدْقَهُ. How should he be convulsed among its levels while you know his sincerity? أَمْ كَيْفَ تَزْجُرُهُ زَبَانِيَتُهَا وَهُوَ يُنَادِيكَ يَا رَبَّ. Or how should its keepers torture him while he calls out to you, O Lord? Regarding this part of the supplication, we mentioned Quranic verses and traditions suggesting and implying that the Almighty Allah has mercy upon all the servants. So He grants the servants all the material and spiritual blessings, and He would not deprive anyone from His bountiful blessings. The point is, however, that there are some conditions to be involved in this vast ocean of mercy, that along with supplication, there needs to be amal and action. That is why we have many traditions recommending the servants to stop the laziness and dullness and start the action. Our supplications must be in the line of those norms and sunan the Almighty Allah has in this universe. And the point is to seek refuge only in Allah and no one else, as we can exactly see this applied in this part of the supplication of Kumail. Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam says in one of his supplications, "And entrust me not to your creatures, but take care of my need alone, and yourself attend to sufficing me. Look upon me and look after me in all my affairs." This does not mean that Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam is negating all those norms and sunan of this universe. This does not mean that he would not refer to anyone in this universe. Of course, this means that he is only referring to Allah, he is only referring to Him, subhanahu wa ta'ala, and seeking refuge in Him. And he is, of course, in need of the others, other than the Almighty Allah, but the need toward others brought by Imam alayhi salam is an extension to the need toward him, the exalted. And this is the secret we need to recognize.
My Lord, then how could he remain in torment when he hopefully relies upon your past forbearance, compassion and mercy? And how can the fire cause him suffering when he hopes for your grace and mercy? And how can its roaring flames shower him when you hear his voice and see his plight?
Thank you, Allah, that we hear, feeling so good about all the things that we went through, knowing that God is pleased with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true, and we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
The ocean of dua.
So dear listeners, this is why it is so important to understand the introductions, to understand the prerequisite parts of why such a servant encircled among those fires and blames of hellfire would talk to his Lord such as this. For example, in the supplication of Arafah, Imam Hussein alayhi salam says, O Allah, suffice me from what I fear, save me against that which I'm cautious of, guard me and my religion, protect me in my journey, take charge of my family and property in my absence. Imam continues, O God, bless me in what you have granted me, humble me in myself, make me distinguished in the eyes of the people, and guard me against the evil of the jinn and mankind. Do not disgrace me because of my sins. Imam alayhi salam is accepting that he might have some problems, although he doesn't, but as all normal kinds of supplicants, as a normal supplicant who would recite this ziyarah or this supplication, Imam alayhi salam is talking to his Lord, saying that I am the one who accepts his own problems and faults and shortages and sins. But we also know that you are the only one whom we can return to. Imam continues, O Allah, do not put me to test through my deeds. Do not deprive me of your bounties and do not entrust my affair to other than you. As you can see, this is exactly what we see in this part of the Kumaya supplication as well. Do not deprive me of your bounties. Imam Ali alayhi salam in this part of the supplication says, وَهُوَ يَرْجُو مَا سَلَفَ مِنْ حِلْمِكَ. This person, this servant, knows your previous clemency, so he cannot remain in chastisement while he has hope for your previous clemency. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode. Wassalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
By my side, I wish to be the most. close to you throughout my life, Ya Allah, oh Allah, be with me all the way.
Economic divide.
France and Germany may have finally caught on to the U.S. plan on why it is so keen to continue the Ukraine war. And weakening Russia may be just the minor reason behind this move. Does this spell the beginning of anti-U.S. stance by EU countries? Hi, I'm Kavita Hwai. Welcome to Economic Divide. Coming up in today's program, we're going to take a look first at the reason for this program to come about, anti-U.S. stance. Namely, France and Germany, who are threatening the U.S., it's called a trade retaliation of some sorts, and it's mainly due because of unfair U.S. competition. Why is it that European countries are now being lured to the U.S.? It's called the U.S. Inflation Reduction Act. Subsidies to lure these companies to the U.S. is one reason, and of course the EU economy is plummeting as a result. When will Europe find out what it's experiencing because of the U.S.? And finally, cracks in the EU-US alliance. U.S. is selling Europe expensive gas and at the same time wants Europe to have an anti-China stance. And the unity over Ukraine war may be breaking up.
The transatlantic ties between the U.S. and major European economies appears to have fractured after Germany and France warned of relations against Washington. The row started after the White House introduced the so-called Inflation Reduction Act, which was signed by the U.S. President Joe Biden back in August of 2022. It offers tax cuts and energy benefits for companies investing on U.S. soils.
Just to remember who we are. We are the United States of America. There's nothing beyond our capacity. That's why so many foreign companies decide to invest or make chips in America. Billions of dollars. We're the best.
The move is intended to lure European businesses to America at a time when the business climate is particularly gloomy in the Eurozone amid rising inflation rates and spiraling energy costs. It also encourages to buy American products, especially when it comes to choosing electric vehicles. Additionally, it offers $370 billion of clean energy subsidies to U.S. companies. The legislation could potentially be disastrous for car makers, especially in Germany and in France. Berlin and France have now warned that if Washington does not scale back, they will introduce countermeasures against the U.S. The French President Emmanuel Macron has said that Europe needs a Buy-European Act, just like the Americans. Macron has even said that Europe must reserve its subsidies for European manufacturers. The escalating trade spat between the U.S. and its European partners risk putting further strains on the global economy, which is suffering from a series of overlapping crises.
When it comes to the war in Ukraine, obviously there are cracks that are appearing based on the unity that has occurred between France and Germany. These are two countries in which Emmanuel Macron, President of France, and the Chancellor of Germany, Olaf Scholz, did have differences, but they have united on this one particular topic. First Tweet takes a look at that. After publicly falling out between the two, Scholz and Macron have found something that they agreed on: concern over unfair competition from the U.S. Both leaders have admitted that if a negotiated solution with the U.S. does not work out, the EU will need its own measures, which it seems like they have already followed through on that. Next, after sabotaging Russia-EU relations, now the U.S. is working overtime to sabotage China-EU relations. Without cheap Russian energy and cheap Chinese goods, the EU will be destroyed, and that is exactly what the U.S. wants. Next up, let's see if they have woken up to reality for what's occurring. This picture puts things into context. Don't stop me. I'm doing this for America. And now our final tweet. U.S. is now in the process of passing the Inflation Reduction Act, which offers tax cuts and energy benefits for companies investing on U.S. soil. The question that comes about is, isn't this a move aimed at making profitable European companies to relocate to the U.S.? Which, as a result, the question then comes, won't this deindustrialize Europe? This goes on to say France estimates that it would lose 8 billion euros as businesses were given incentives to shift to the U.S. European leaders are now in a panic mode. Chancellor Scholz is now scheduled to visit China, which he has already. We mentioned this in the program. And this visit will be followed by President Macron, who will make a subsequent visit to China. Let's now turn to a subject that fits in nicely with the U.S. plans of crushing or damaging the EU economy. The sabotage of the Nord Stream gas pipeline. Remember that? Well, it was a major act of sabotage, one in which the Russian President Vladimir Putin has actually called it an act of terrorism. Now, in order to bring this point about or to see if this is something that you agree with and to open your the whole angle, we have used Jeffrey Sachs to relay his thoughts. He's a professor of economics at Columbia University. And he has his own thoughts about who he thinks is behind this, which may show clearly the motives that were involved, especially when it appears to be more than just one player. And, of course, what gains there would be. And for whom?
I said that the signs point to the U.S. As being the government responsible for this destruction of Nord Stream 1. There isn't proof. I didn't say that there was proof. I said that there was evidence that placed responsibility with the United States. In fact, in February of this year, President Biden said, if Russia invades Ukraine, Nord Stream will end. And when a reporter asked, Mr. President, how can you say that? This is a Russian-German pipeline. President Biden said, we have our ways. And so that by itself tends to point to motive. Similarly, the U.S. Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, after the event, in summing up the situation, said this is a tremendous opportunity to wean Europe from Russian energy once and for all.
All right, Jeffrey Sachs there. Of course, there are other angles behind this whole sabotage of the Nord Stream pipeline. I mean, there are many deniers, obviously, that could not even imagine that the U.S. could be guilty of such an act. But Jeffrey Sachs believes otherwise.
Of course, the United States has been in the business many times in the past of blowing up infrastructure of other countries, including a Soviet-era pipeline, including Iranian centrifuges at Iranian nuclear facility, and so on. So I don't have proof, but I think the evidence leans that way.
Time now for the InfoNews section of the program, where we take a look at economic news from around the world. First up, we're going to take a look at who's providing India with the oil. Well, Russia is. It's actually India's top oil supplier. Crude deliveries have jumped for the month of October to 8%. That's a lot. Now, how that has happened is that Russia has overtaken Saudi Arabia and also has overtaken Iraq to become India's largest oil supplier. Up next, another statement or projection, I should say, that well, it's just ringing true because everybody is saying it, that the UK is going to have a hard winter. Brits will have to pay twice as much for energy in the coming months. It adds to that that even with the fact that this is a doubling up of what people are used to pay for their energy bills, the government is still trying to somehow scrounge up money in order to see if they can cap that and then help, obviously, the families that can't afford it. You have to wait and see. Then taking a look at climate change, well, that's right now top news. COP27 is happening in Egypt, but UN has come out and said developing countries need up to $340 billion a year to adapt to extreme weather. And it further added that taking inflation into account, it said that between $315 billion per year and then up to $565 billion per year will be required by the year 2050. And then this piece of news made a lot of people happy, not only within Brazil, but also in many parts of the world. Lula has won. And the question that now has popped up is, has Lula's economic thinking changed with the times? That's something that is very much a concern, because Lula, when he was the president, obviously went with an economic plan suitable for those times. But right now, with the public debt to GDP ratio of, at the same time, over 90% of the budget was for mandatory spending. So that's going to be a big task for Lula to have to deal with. Those were the stories we picked for you. Of course, we always appreciate it if we get ideas from you, from wherever part of the world you're in.
Economic Divide. This series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
The in-depth section of the program is upon us. When it comes to the intentions behind the U.S. to continue the Ukraine war, there are many reasons for it. The U.S. and mainstream media would like you to believe that this would be to weaken Russia. Then there are those who have said that the U.S. arms manufacturers are reaping the benefits of massive arms sales, hence profits. But there's a possible sinister U.S. plot behind all of this. First, let's go back to the year 2014, and possibly even before that. NATO, led by the U.S., kept inching towards the Russian borders. Even as the war broke out in 2014 between Ukraine and Crimea, NATO continued its eastward expansion, all the while provoking Russia. Well, after numerous attempts for resolving this matter diplomatically, like the Normandy Initiative, Russia felt an existential threat and decided the time had come to execute a special military operation. That was enough for the war with Ukraine to officially kickstart, along with the most severe sanctions to be placed against Russia, from the United States to the EU. This was meant to paralyze Russia's economy and its source of income. Needless to say, European gas prices began shooting through the roof, as you can see over here, based on what you're looking at from the year 2012 and, of course, inching up to the year 2022. Obviously, what this meant is that Russia was being squeezed. Well, in the meantime, Russia had not closed off the main source of gas supplies to the EU. And just when it appeared Russia was ready to open the valve, as it's said, even to reach this capacity of gas for Europe, then boom, the Nord Stream pipeline, it was sabotaged, a final nail in the EU gas supply coffin. Well, as a result, factories in the EU, especially those that consumed the most energy, such as steel, fertilizer, and feedstocks, began to rethink their income strategy. Some of the companies at this point and factories have decided to relocate and move to the U.S. due to cheaper gas prices. These are major factories. So for Europe, that's a very harsh deal. Good for the U.S., though, since this would add to U.S. economic growth and consequentially create jobs in the process. Another reason to make sure this process would occur, the Inflation Reduction Act. In short, it's an act passed by the U.S., which would invest $369 billion over 10 years into energy and climate programs, and it would provide a number of tax credits and incentives to promote clean energy technologies. This was something European companies and factories could not resist. But Europe may be waking up to this U.S. plot. The headline brings us to Germany, where its leader and top CEOs arrived in Beijing just a few days ago, as of the recording of this program. They need China more than ever. Not a scenario that the U.S. expected. and something that the U.S. obviously does not like, which can be construed as a slap in the face of the U.S. That's right. Well, we figured best to turn now to Ben Norton from Multipolarista. Now, he's a guest who has been featured in this program to tell us how this may be a possible EU turnaround when it comes to the Ukraine conflict in a message to the U.S.
I wrote about this in an article at multipolarista.com. I'll link to it in the description below. These comments from the EU foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell, really shows how this neoliberal phase of capitalism was predicated on subordinating China and Russia to U.S. imperialism.
I think that the Europeans were facing a situation in which we suffer the consequences of a process that has been lasting for years, in which we have decoupled the sources of our prosperity from the sources of our security. This is a sentence to provide a headline. And I'm taking that from Oliver Schmidt, who has been developing this thesis, I think, quite well. Our prosperity has been based on cheap energy coming from Russia, Russian gas, cheap and suppose affordable and secure and stable, which has been proved not the case, and the access to the big China market for exports and imports, for technological transfer, for investment, and for having cheap goods. I think that the Chinese workers with their low salaries has done much better and much more to contain inflation than all the central banks together.
Germany, which is considered EU's economic powerhouse, is also supporting the French calls for more protection for European businesses and manufacturers. The German Chancellor, Olaf Scholz, has agreed that there needs to be countermeasures similar to the U.S. scheme if Washington refuses to address key concerns voiced by Berlin and Paris. Scholz has publicly said that Europe will have to discuss the Inflation Reduction Act with the U.S., quote, in great depth. Brussels has made it clear that the U.S. legislation to subsidize its own businesses at the expense of its European partners represents a form of economic protectionism that undermines the rules of the World Trade Organization. The move is also seen as a setback for efforts to revive transatlantic relations after years of trade friction with the Donald Trump administration. Fear the ongoing transatlantic trade spat surrounding electric vehicles and other goods could overshadow the biannual meeting between Washington and Brussels.
It says that they are all in all on positive track, and it's very important that we are cooperating closely between EU and US as strategic allies, especially in the situation we are facing right now. At the same time, there are also concerns related to the Inflation Reduction Act and its discriminatory provisions. And in this regard, we had set a joint EU-US task force to deal with those issues.
I will be pretty frank. I think in the form how it was presented, I think for the European Union it's unacceptable. And we simply expect that we will get the same status as Canada and Mexico. So I think in the form how it was presented, this is extremely protective against exports from Europe, and we have to clarify it.
European policymakers say the U.S.'s discriminatory trade policies is particularly harmful at a time when the world faces an economic slowdown because of the COVID-19 pandemic, the Ukraine war, and trade bottlenecks.
The economy of the Eurozone and Europe, for that matter, is on the edge. Many European countries are experiencing record inflation and recessions. Now, that it is becoming clear that the U.S. is taking advantage of Europe when it comes to the war in Ukraine. What is Europe going to do about it? First off, we have told you how Germany and France have realized this inequality. Germany, Europe's powerhouse, went to China with an economic team to make sure its economic ties with China remains intact. Don't forget, China is Europe's biggest economic partner. In 2021, even though China was the third largest partner for EU exports of goods, 10.2%, it was the largest partner for EU imports of goods, 22.4%. Europe has to act quickly if it wants to prevent the exodus of factories and companies from Europe to the US or elsewhere, since the economies of European countries are tanking. Inflation in the Eurozone is expected to have hit a new record high of 10.7% in October. Italy saw the biggest monthly increase in prices, with inflation jumping from 9.4% in September to 12.8% in October. More than half of the Eurozone countries recorded double-digit inflation rates in October, including Germany, 11.6%, Belgium, 13.1%, and the Netherlands, 16.8%. France showed the lowest rate at 7.1%. Here is a look at the inflation rate in each country in Europe. When it comes to energy, that is the central reason for inflation in many European countries, and there is no sign of relief there for Europe. First, OPEC, led by Saudi Arabia, announced a 2 million barrel per day cut. Then came the warning by Qatar, a gas powerhouse, to the EU. Buy Russian gas, in which Qatar backed off from supplying gas to Europe. It has been told in no uncertain terms that there is no alternative to Russian natural gas supplies unless Europe wants to get devastated, or for several winters to come. Qatar has now declared Europe cannot survive without Russian gas. That does it for this segment of the program. Any comments or questions, feel free to send them to us. Contact info is on your screens now.
When it comes to Europe, unfortunately, it has dark days ahead of it. If it continues to have the U.S. lead it down this war path, well, it's going to suffer huge economic losses, something that has obviously started already. The German Chancellor Olaf Scholz's visit to China is a positive development, one to surely burn the U.S., but whether Europe is going to stand up fully to the U.S. remains to be seen. It's a good starting point, but again, only time will tell. That is it for this edition of the program. For Mika Vitahui and the entire team here at Economic Divide, it's goodbye. Until next time.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.